All right. Good evening, everyone. I hope you're doing well. I am in President Patrick Casey, and I'm glad you could make it to this week's weekly address. So we're going to begin, as usual, with our white pill of the week. And we actually have a very large white pill. Well, we have a few, but I'm going to start with the best one. And the best one, the most significant white pill, probably the biggest white pill we've had in a while, is that I am proud to announce the launch of our Minuteman program, or a Minutemen program. So the Minutemen program is going to be similar to what in Identity Europa was known as the Guardian program, though the Guardian program in Identity Europa didn't go anywhere. So this is it is a different thing, but the idea is the same. The Minutemen program is going to be somewhat of an elite cadre of activists who are going to basically sign up to dedicate themselves to the cause so that we can know exactly who is willing to go out there to show their face, to people that can be sent on missions, people whom we can reliably count on showing up to events. And it's going to be a very fun program to be part of. It is going to be challenging. It's not going to be for people who have one foot in all of this. And I understand that. For most of us, well, not me, for most people, yeah, you kind of have to have one foot in all of this. But for those of you who have shown your face, you're willing to show your face again, you have the time and energy to put into really fighting for our people, then the Minutemen program is for you. The Minutemen program is going to be invite only for the foreseeable future. If you would like to join, you can message me on Mattermost and I will keep that in mind. But there isn't going to be an application process. We are going to reach out to you. I believe we're going to, I don't think we have sent out the emails just yet, but we do have an invite list of, I think, 10 people so far who are going to be invited. Now, will all chapter leaders, will all members of the advisory council automatically be part of the Minutemen program? And the answer is no. This is something that is just going to be for the most dedicated of activists, which includes some chapter leaders, doesn't include others. That's no slight to them. We have some who chapter leaders are doing great work, even though they can't, do activism for, due to their personal situations. But there's going to be somewhat of a probationary period for Minutemen, perhaps not the Minutemen who were invited at launch, but to be part of the Minutemen program, you're going to, if we do extend you the invite and you decide to accept, I'm thinking a 3-month probationary period where you're basically a prospect. You're a prospect, meaning that you have to do a number of things, read a number of books, participate in a number of actions, display the ability to keep a cool head about you, and so forth. I'm getting texted here, hopefully. Test. I'm being told that you guys can't hear me. Pardon me. Can you, someone shoot me a DM if you can? All right. Well, that audio issue appears to be on the end of the gentleman who texted me, though I certainly do appreciate that, given the fact that, it has happened in the past. So, but anyways, yeah, with the Minuteman program. So, if you want to be a Minuteman, you want to be part of the Minutemen, you will have to receive an invite. Again, you can ask me if you want to be part of it. You, beyond that, will need to be a prospect for a certain number of months, which will entail reading some books on activism, displaying good character, right? If you're in that few months, if you drink too much and do something stupid, if you're, you flake out of an action, or maybe even you just flake out of a meetup for no reason, then that's the kind of thing. These are the kind of things that would disqualify you. I'll take it on a case by case basis, though. But this is a way to incentivize those of you who really want to give it your all to get more active. And it's good for. We're going to have a repository of dedicated, fairly resilient activists whom we can reliably call on. Depending on how things go, I could see us maybe flying you know, covering the expenses of Minutemen who travel to certain events, right? If we want to get 10 people in, you know, if we want to get 20 people in, I don't know, Idaho to do an action, but we don't have people in Idaho, then yeah, we could conceivably, you know, cover the costs for Minutemen to travel around. Now, I can't guarantee that. That's going to depend on a lot of things, and so forth. But our activism department has been working overtime crafting the Minutemen program. I'm very excited to see it implemented. Like I said, we're going to be sending out some of those invites, I think, by the end of the weekend, and we're going to go from there. So this is there will be other ways that the Minutemen are recognized. It's almost going to be like a fraternity within a fraternity. But with that said, it will not be there's not going to be some snooty sense of elitism, at least not intentionally. Because, yeah, other people are going to contribute in other ways, right? Someone who is a patron and shows up at every meetup and is very active in the local community is in no way inferior in terms of commitment to the cause than someone who's, you know, has a resilient situation and thus is able to do activism, right? We need the community people. We need the patrons, admin types, and activists, and I think a lot of people are some combination of all of those. So that is our main white pill of the week. Our organization is growing at a very impressive rate. We're growing organizationally, administratively in particular, and that form of growth is one of the most important, because all of the external manifestations that you see from an organization are usually the result of order that has been created internally. Bureaucracy, hierarchy, you know, a chain of command, having the right people in the right places. So a lot of that stuff might be boring. And as someone who basically deals with that for 8 to 12 hours a day, I can assure you it's not always the most exciting thing. But the results are exciting, and we have to do whatever it takes to build an organization that is going to be able to succeed in its goals. And that may or may not be glamorous, right? You know, the politics and pro stuff where you go out and, you know, you spend 5 to 10 minutes yelling inside of a bookstore it can't always be that. I don't even know what this would be like if 8 to 10 hours a day I was yelling inside enclosed rooms at angry mobs of boomer liberals. But that is the Minutemen program. Like I said, you can message me on Mattermost if you're interested. But keep in mind, if I'm going to talk to your chapter leader, if you've been screwing around, you haven't been going to meetups, if you haven't been showing up to activism, then you're going to need to convince me that you've had a change of heart, right? For in the past few months, a lot of chapters have been kind of slow. Now, you know, people in chapter blame the chapter leader blames the guys. I don't really know what's going on in some of these. These are rare situations, and it's nothing to be concerned of. I know that my personal chapter, we're getting together twice a week. We're doing all kinds of amazing stuff. But I'm definitely very blessed to have a relatively large chapter, at least the very solid core group. But the point is that the Minutemen need to be the people with energy and initiative. I need initiative. We need initiative. If you ever want to have a leadership role in the organization, show me initiative. Right? You know, our civilization is being stripped from us. Our birthright is being taken from us. Stop playing video games, at least as often, you know, if you're doing it often. You know, stop watching garbage TV. Stop going out and getting trashed every, you know, Saturday and Sunday with a bunch of people who would hate you if they found out about your views. Now, but at the same time, you have to have balance, right? I'm not saying that, you know, you should swear off your you know, sever all ties with the outside world and just only dedicate yourself to AIM. That's not healthy. But we all need to be constantly asking ourselves whether or not we can be doing more. And I think if we take an honest look at our daily routines in the places that we exert, you know, where we exert our energy and time and money, I think there's always room for improvement. There's room for improvement for me too. I'm trying to work on, you know, I work 40 to 60 hours a week, and I think I would actually be less effective if I worked like 80 hours a week. Though in certain situations I have done that, right? Around the time of launching AIM and dealing with all of the leaks. Yeah. I mean, if you counted up all of the hours that I was looking at my phone, handling these things, you know, dealing with everything else. And yeah, it might've been 80 hours a week. I don't know. This is, there's kind of no off days and no, definitely always on call. And whenever I receive a notification anywhere, I am aware of the fact that that could be some new crises to attend to. And often it is, but they usually get resolved. So the point there is we just have to be honest with ourselves. We have to look at our own level of involvement and ask, is this important? What is more important than this? Can I do more? And so as I was saying, with my personal contribution, it's more in terms of efficiency, because efficiency is good too, right? If you only have so much time that you can dedicate to something, make sure you're making the most out of it. If your chapter is just getting together and getting drunk every Saturday and, you know, that's the extent, you know, that's got to stop. I think that has largely stopped, and that largely hasn't been, that wasn't really part of too much of the part of the culture of Identity Europa. With our new organization, I don't think that's necessarily the case too. Every meetup should not be getting drunk, right? It's okay to have drinks and have a good time. Absolutely, right? We want people to be, you know, socializing. It's one of our locals' birthday over the weekend. We had people over at the HQ. We were playing board games, drinking. We did some MMA training the next day. You know, you can do it all, right? So if you're going to have meetups where you're just kicking back a few and you know, drinking, then try to do some other stuff in there as well. But much could be said for meetups, and that's kind of something that falls more within the purview of your chapter leader. So I won't continue too much longer on that. But there is another white pill. That is that the DOJ and the FTC are investigating. Which is it? I think the FTC is investigating Amazon and one more. And then I think the DOJ might be investigating Google. Please don't crucify me if that is incorrect. But the point there is that is a positive step in the right direction. We are seeing today massive amounts of deplatforming and censorship on, and demonetization, which I guess is its own kind of way to get screwed over, from YouTube. I think you guys have probably been paying attention to that, but it looks like the government might be taking a step in the right direction. And I think I would like to be given reasons to have a little more faith in the system. When I get blackpilled with the system, I don't become emotionally despondent. I've kind of done my best to sever, you know, my internal emotional mental state from the chaos of the outside world. And I would encourage you to do the same. But the point there is, when I look back on the enthusiasm and the optimism that we had in 2015, 2016, even some of 2017, though I think a lot of people after Hellgate realized what happened, I was a little more naive and had a little more faith in things. But the point there is that we, I would like to be given reasons to be optimistic again about the system. I'm always optimistic about our potential to build this organization into one that is going to succeed in its endeavors. There are many ways that we could succeed. But it will be very interesting to see how the DOJ and FTC investigations into these big tech companies work out. I think they're pursuing antitrust options. And that I'm no expert on the subject. From what I understand, that seems to be a pretty good route to go. Now, even if that's not the best route to go, at least it's something, right? It's more than Trump saying he's monitoring things, right? I'm paying attention. Don't worry. You know, when you're out there getting your livelihood stripped away from you because PayPal, Patreon, everyone else removes the ability for you to facilitate digital economic transactions, you know, don't worry. Trump is watching. He's watching from up in the sky, and he's really, you know, he's paying attention. But there seems to be some action there, so that's good. Now, same time, I don't really blame the black pillars, because most of the things that we've gotten our hopes up for in the Trump administration have failed to apparate. They've failed to manifest into reality. We're not trying to infiltrate the GOP, at least not, that's not really something we're, as an organization, spending a lot of effort in doing. We're not trying to get conservatism to like us, absolutely not. I wouldn't have sent all of those tweets today if you've been following me, if that was the case. So we, you know, we what we're doing in terms of building our networks, high quality, vetted, well-adjusted people, doing activism to spread awareness of our ideas and call into question the legitimacy of the ruling class and the ruling class's ruling ideology. These things are going to be important until we win, until they're not, until they don't matter anymore. But that, you know, save some kind of miraculous happening, that is not something that's going to happen anytime too soon. You never know. But we are going to continue along the course. We are committed to this path, regardless of where it may take us. And that is all that needs to be said there. But it will be interesting to see how these investigations play out. Last thing I'll say on the subject is the House, House committee, the House launched an investigation into the big tech too. And the guy who's leading it, or one of the main guys there, is Nadler, I believe. I forget his first name, but he is a Democrat from New York. And he has one of his main contributors is, what is it, ABC Industries, which I believe is the parent company of Google. He's given Google, or received from Google, I forget which, awards on multiple occasions. Like, this is all public knowledge. So I wouldn't expect that one to go anywhere, right? I don't think Nadler is going to be not really fighting for our interest. But nevertheless, I hope these big tech companies get put in line. I think that really, I mean, it really is the immediate threat. The demographic threat is something, you know, immigration, obviously these things matter. But in terms of our ability to build our movement, to spread our message, to network, to really exist in the public square, all of that is dependent upon these big tech companies. And as we saw today, they're not too keen on keeping us on their platforms. So moving along, we have, we'll do our weekly roundup here. Don't know if we had a ton of activism. We had some flyering and so forth. Allow me to check. It looks like we had stickers, flyers. Please bear it, and we'll talk about the member handbook pretty soon here. I know that's what everyone's talking about. Everyone is just, I mean, it's just all over social media, AIM member handbook, totally a game changer. But do keep in mind that if you're putting up stickers, you've got to be very, very careful. Check your local ordinance, because quite often it's very explicit about the fact that you can't do it. Now, when a nice old lady goes around and puts up flyers saying things, you know, say, lost dog, lost cat, whatever, is she going to get hit with a vandalism charge? No. No. It's selective enforcement. It's selective enforcement. Yeah, and I'll say that there have been a number of legal cases recently wherein the you know, people who've gotten in trouble for putting up stickers and flyers. I won't mention any names, but I'll say that one of the more prominent ones, the charges were eventually dropped. Now, I don't know if there's going to be that person is going to be suing. I would hope so, given the just frivolousness of that, the chilling effect that was intended by charging him with something this silly. So the point there is, just please be careful with the flyer. Because even if they drop the charges later, guess what? You've spent money on lawyers that you may or may not get back. You have been doxxed. There's that. So I don't want to scare you away from, you know, doing these things. But I'd stick to, you know, absolute safe areas are public bulletin boards, particularly on public universities. And you can put up stickers and you can affix flyers to buildings, so long as you have consulted with local ordinance and hopefully get a lawyer to look at it and tell you. You could probably call a lawyer in your city, say, hey, I'm thinking of putting up some flyers for, like, you know, this bird watching club I'm part of. Is that a legal thing? Oftentimes lawyers, they receive questions all day and they, you know, for the sake of their customer service or whatever, they'll just respond and say something. And they might just say yes and leave it at that. But it looks like we did have our video get posted of the San Luis Obispo action. That was a fantastic action. I really liked it. When I saw the pictures at first, I was a little apprehensive because it looked like it was in the middle of nowhere. Video, though, is phenomenal. Props to the guys for going out and doing it. Props to everyone who filmed it. And obviously our Token in-house videographer did a fantastic job as usual. But yeah, this is good. I mean, these minute activism clips, they're fast, they're energetic, they have good music, they're visually appealing. So this is the kind of content that we like to put out. When did we put the Kate Smith up? So this was the 29th. So it looks like that was last Wednesday. So I think we did talk about Kate Smith, but that action was very good too. Very creative. And as I was telling the chapter leaders in our meeting last night, you know, we should be thinking about creating content above all else. It's all about the content. We have to be in the content mindset. And content comes in many forms. Not, you know, think about doing creating content before doing activism, because activism, the activism that we do is qualifies as content, right? It's activism content. So content can take many forms, like the man on the street stuff that Conrad and the others did. That was superb. And we want to see more of that. And I definitely want to encourage you guys to think outside of the box. And the best tool to think outside of the box is Beautiful Trouble. I'll keep saying it until more people start reading it. That book has an entire section on different activism types, right? Street theater. Media jacking, things like that. Lots of very, very practical strategic stuff that we can implement. And in AIM, with the launch of AIM and the retirement of Identity Europa, we made the conscious decision to ensure that AIM has very diverse and creative actions. The amount of manpower that it would take to get, so, you know, we could conceivably do, you know, have every chapter do a banner drop once a week. That would be a lot, but, you know, people looking on Twitter would just see the same thing over and over, and they wouldn't remember it. So we need to get the most bang for our buck. We obviously like the idea of doing big demonstrations, and I'm hoping that 4th of July action, we'll be able to get enough people out to do a demonstration. I haven't done one in a while. Getting out there on the megaphone is incredibly energizing. It's a one-of-a-kind experience, and I'm looking forward to that. But that basically concludes our roundup. Though we do have, you know, those rules on putting up flyers and stickers, I don't want to scare you guys away. There are public universities around you. You can go do it. Identity Europa put up tens of thousands of flyers, and I think maybe once or twice someone got into trouble. And that's because they weren't putting them up on public bulletin boards. So the AIM member handbook. I want to begin by saying the fact that I gave myself a deadline to finish it meant that it wasn't incomplete, but there were some differences. There were a few issues that could have been fixed. I don't think the typos were as bad as some people were making it out to be. I think people sent me, a few, definitely less than 10, on a 15-page document. There were some weird spacing errors. Those weren't on the Google Doc that I created a PDF from. But I guess, you know, the process of transferring into PDF, there was the issue. So I'm working on resolving those, given that it's a format issue. It's a little more complicated than just fixing a few typos. But thank you to everyone who sent out the typos and let me know. So everyone in this organization, by the end of this month, will be required to have read the handbook. I'm going to make an announcement at the end of the month and saying that by choosing to remain in this Mattermost server, you are thereby you're thereby agreeing that you have read and you will adhere to the AIM member handbook. You know, at the end of this month, that will be, I mean, you're going to be held to this stuff in here regardless of whether or not you read it. And you're going to be held to this stuff in here now. Many of these standards are standards that we have held in place already, but the handbook just represents them, put a written word, basically. So we're going to briefly go through this. We're not going to go through everything, but I do want to go through the handbook, just so you guys can see what it is. You can find that in resources, the resources channel on National, along with where to pay dues and so forth. I will say this, as usual, I will be incredibly friendly. I will be the nicest person ever, regardless of most, you know, anything that you ask. There are probably some exceptions there. But when it comes to dues, you know, what's the PO box? What's the latest, you know, electronic means if we have one? All these things, resources, just please go to resources. That's where you'll find what you need. And I know those things do change quite often. PO box isn't going to change anytime soon. But you should know where to go to look for it. So please try to refrain from asking me that. But again, will I be rude to you because you asked me what the PO box is or the electronic payment method is? Probably not. That might change at some point in the future. Maybe I'll kind of make fun of you just so that you kind of get the become a little more self-sufficient, but it's okay. So I will go through these here. So beginning in the introduction, we talk about what we're about, five principles. We talk about the activism, the community, how are the two different facets to the organization. And then the next page, basically, we have the five principles explained in a little further detail. If you read them on our website, there's nothing dramatically different here. Then we have the membership guidelines. So these are 15 guidelines that you are held to. I'm working on adding a few more. I'm not going to add like 20 more, but I think that there are some things that need to be put into writing so that everyone is on the same page about. We have an OPSEC guide. This OPSEC guide is fairly concise. That is by design. That's not by accident. So let's go through some of that advice. This is basic stuff, but you know, your name is the most sensitive thing that you have. One second, I'm gonna write something down real quick. Your name is the most sensitive piece of information about you, with some exceptions. Perhaps, I guess, social security number or something, but you don't want your real name getting out there. I would advise on anything related to the movement, use an alias, right? When you apply to something, right, when you go to AMRAN, you absolutely should not have your real first name, last name, or honestly, probably first name on your badge. When you're talking on Skype to someone in the movement, when you're talking on Discord, no one should be able to glance at a screen and dox you. It should be harder than that. But you know what? All of this stuff is contained in the handbook, and I want to encourage you guys to read it and to go through it. We do have this here. So OPSEC is part of it. We want people to be, stopping the low hanging fruit. Most doxing happens because of low hanging fruit. You have some social media account you forgot existed. You have a bunch of normie social media accounts you're aware of, but you don't think anyone's going to link them to your fake one. Well, believe it or not, you know, it can be done. I think one of the easiest things to do is to remove your employer info from the internet. And that, I know for some people that isn't the case, that isn't optional, but for many it is. But anyway, so while OPSEC is important and we will continue to practice it, becoming resilient is going to be very important, particularly for activists, for Minutemen. If you are part of the Minutemen program, we're going to assess your fragility, right? If you are, you know, if you want to join the Minutemen and be like this hardcore dedicated activist and you're, you know, the CEO of some huge company making a ton of money, we'll probably try to talk you into just giving us money and then doing stuff behind the scenes. Because you're going to be far more useful to the cause that way. We'd find someone else who doesn't have the earning potential, at least not, you know, maybe they're young, maybe they do in the future, but someone who doesn't, you know, isn't rolling in money and you know, wouldn't suffer as many consequences from getting doxxed, be part of the program, be the ones doing the activism. So when people often use the term anti-fragile, but they do it erroneously. And I'd like to thank our accountant for cluing me in to, I believe this is Nicholas Nassim Taleb, who's a character. He has me blocked on Twitter. He's probably blocked thousands, if not tens of thousands on Twitter. People on Twitter, very interesting character. But so he has a trichotomy that he has set up. And I think that we should adhere to that for the sake of being accurate and not being incorrect. So it's, you have fragile, resilient, and anti-fragile. Fragile means that you are unable to weather the storm. Whatever attack you are facing ends up destroying you, right? You crumple underneath. An example of this would be someone who gets doxxed, you know, their wife leaves him, loses his job, loses the house, loses all of that. You rarely hear about it being that bad. In fact, I don't know if I've heard about it being that bad. And the worst doxxed is people always bounce back. They always do. So that is fragility, right? And all of us are some degree fragile, right? There's always something that the system can do to make our lives hell. But resilient, so to be resilient, that's what people are who colloquially use the term anti-fragile are getting at. To be resilient is to be able to weather the storm. It is to be able to stand strong, stand fast, and to not buckle beneath the pressure. So someone who's resilient is someone who's maybe whose family already knows. They have an employment situation where even if they get fired, they can get a new job very easily. Right? One of our guys who got doxxed last month got fired, but he got a good, he had a, received a good letter of recommendation, and he got hired somewhere else making more money. Right? So that's, that would almost be a case of anti-fragile. So to be anti-fragile is to not like being resilient, where you just, you know, weather the storm. To be anti-fragile is to emerge stronger from attack, right? You know, someone's attacks only make you grow stronger. That's like something out of, you know, I don't know, a science fiction movie where the you know, evil villain is only growing stronger as a result of your attacks. But we're not evil villains. So for most of us, that doesn't really describe our situation. Anti-fragile is some examples of that would be maybe you have like a really big brand that you can promote if you get doxxed, right? Julian Von Abel was one example of that. He probably sold at least, you know, somewhere in the six figures in terms of money from book sales, right? Because he drunkenly ranted about white people being epic. Now, not everyone's going to be anti-fragile and everyone should assess their own situation to determine that. But let us, again, keep in mind that to be anti-fragile and to be resilient are two different things. To be resilient is to withstand. It is defensive, right? You're standing strong. You're not backing down. Anti-fragile means that you actually grow stronger. So we should be careful about using those terms in their correct context. So I have some tips here for how to become resilient. So with the Minutemen, we're going to be working with you more closely on OPSEC and resilience because you're going to be the ones putting yourself out there the most, but these are all tips that people should bear well to keep in mind. Avoid taking unnecessary debt, save money by reducing unnecessary spending, start a side hustle capable of generating resilient and preferably passive income. So some examples of that, investing in real estate, B&B hosting, Uber driving, e-commerce, right? Starting your own shop, sell stuff on Etsy. I don't know. Freelance writing, selling clothes, Skype tutoring, Fiverr and remote.co are two websites that should be looked into for, remote and freelance work. Also, I've heard that it's fairly easy to become a security guard and, you know, it pays relatively decently. It's definitely above minimum wage and I don't think they really care. So that's something to consider as well. Also consider becoming your own boss. I just found a typo. Consider starting becoming your own boss. I don't know about that. So consider becoming your own boss. Now, easier said than done, but guess what? Far less intelligent people than you have been able to do it. So a lot of it does have to do with your mindset. You just need to have the gorilla mindset and then anything's possible. So YouTube offers quite a bit in terms of information on how to start your own business doing something, right? Window washing is a good example. When I was in college, I had a friend who had a window washing business. He would charge people like $50 to $100 per hour. That's a lot of money, right? He had employees helping him, but you know, you could charge someone that and do it yourself. And obviously you'd be able to clean less windows, but you know, you can, people, guys, there are people out there far less intelligent than anyone in here who have the drive and who believe in themselves. And at the risk of sounding, you know, like a cliche motivational speaker, a lot of it really does come back to mindset, right? If you wanted to become your own boss, you could do it. You could do it. The average, even the dumbest person in the organization is far more intelligent than the average person. So intelligence is good, but if you're not using it right, if you're not directing it in the right way and you don't believe in your own abilities, then you're not going to really be able to create a life that, you know, you can really, really enjoy. But
yeah, window washing processes, window washing business, auto detailing business. You have things like, there are plenty of things that you could look up on the internet.
I knew a guy who did a palm tree removal business. He had I'm not going to get into the whole backstory there, but I would also recommend easing your friends and family into your views. And I mean ease, right? If your parents would disown you for having these views, probably better to just kind of, I don't know, just not mention it really. It's not worth, if you can avoid having that kind of falling out, that would probably be for the best. But at the same time, I mean, if you can get them on board with Tucker to begin with, that's kind of a good, like, fairly normie place to go. If you can't get them on board with Tucker, then you're probably not going to be able to get them on board with us. So when dealing with an upset employer, seek legal counsel before accepting any resignation offers. I would definitely emphasize this. You want to ensure that you don't get talked into anything, right? You have rights. Maybe you live in a state where there are laws against firing people for, you know, their political views. And there are such states, right? Those are the kinds of things that you want to pursue. And for those of you, okay, I already went through that. So that's the resilience guide. I want you guys to read through that on your own and familiarize yourselves with it. So we have our materials protocol as well. And started off with a quote from Nathan. He had a really great one about, you know, when we occupy space, we occupy minds. I don't know if you found that from someone else. I think that was a Nathan DiBigo original, but it's absolutely true, right? That's why we do activism. We go and we take over space and we say, you know, this is a space for us. This is an identitarian space. We're going to come out. We're going to talk. We're going to take it over. People are going to be forced to think about us, right? They would love to shut us out from the public discussion, from the public square. And we're not going to settle for that. So, but please, you're required to read through this before placing a single flyer or sticker. But you know, some basic advice: before placing a single flyer or sticker somewhere, be sure to check local ordinance. That is really step one. You just want to make sure you're not breaking the law. Everything we do has to be legal. There might be in some certain situations that it would be beneficial to commit acts of civil disobedience. That's entirely different from this, and those are you know, situations are few and far between. So public bulletin boards, public universities, definitely stay clear of high schools, middle schools, elementary schools, and private universities, right? If you go on private property and you're putting stuff up, they're going to launch a police investigation in there, and they're probably going to find you. So don't do it. Also, avoid placing materials close to diversity centers, black fraternity or sorority houses. Doing so could constitute intimidation, and that's not what we're going for. And also keep in mind, if you're out at a public university or you're just in public and, you know, a security guard comes up, not a cop, a security guard, and they start questioning you, you can just say, oh, you know, I was just on my way out. Sorry, I don't have anything to say, and leave it at that. And then you can leave. I don't think they have the ability to force you to, what they try to do is they try to get your information. They try to get your name and driver's license or something. Don't give them your ID. Don't say anything like that. And if they're really insistent, just say, you know, I have nothing to say. I will not, I demand an attorney. But you know, usually these types are just going to be like, all right, get out of here. I don't think they have the authority to arrest you. But the police do. So if the police come, then do the same thing. Just like, hey officer. Yeah. I was just on my way out. And then if they keep going, oh, sorry, you know, I have nothing to say. I'm not going to and invoke my right to remain silent. So, because they don't want you, you don't want to admit to anything. You don't want to give them any pretext to say that you were lying, or to give them a pretext to create a false narrative. I just remembered another white pill. I forgot to write these down, so I'm a bit disorganized tonight, I suppose. The Rise Above movement guys, the three of them who didn't go to Charlottesville, had their federal case dropped. And that is fantastic. I knew many of the, I knew one of the guys involved there. And he was a good guy. I think that there were probably strategic lessons learned with how Ram was attacked by the state, how to avoid that kind of attack. But I mean, did they do anything ethically wrong? No. Did they do anything illegal? Well, apparently not. So there's no need for us to, you know, criticize or condemn them. We do want to learn from everything that happens in the broader movement, both successes and failures. And there are definitely some lessons to learn there. But, you know, they were good guys, right? Like in the case of the Huntington Beach rally that was cited in this FBI complaint, basically they, what happened is they went there and an Antifa guy walks up to the middle, she's a little older than middle-aged, I don't know, maybe in her 60s, female organizer, so someone's mom or grandma, possibly both, and they sprayed her in the face with mace, and then they walked away. Well, Ram chased them down, held them down. There was a little scuffle that ensued. Well, you know what? You can't just go, like, mace people in the face. So, fortunately, the judge in California still believes in the rule of law. I know that's kind of becoming a rarity these days, but not there, not in his jurisdiction, which is pretty good. So that is good. As to whether or not that will bode well for Identity Europa's legal case, that remains to be seen. Turns out discovery is going to be going on for far longer than I had initially expected. So we're kind of back to the discovery game, the waiting game, I guess. You know, giving them what they want, not anything that's going to dox people, of course. But, you know, the thing is, there's recently an article that came out where a number of people, Eli Mosley, Matt Heimbach, and Dylan Hopper, I believe, from American Vanguard, or Vanguard America, I forget what they were called towards the end, but apparently there's been, you know, they're talking about, like, this is their last chance for them to turn over the information and discovery that's asked of them. Then they could face, you know, sanctions and, you know, possibly get arrested. So it's a serious case, right? No one's going to jail over the results of the trial, but, you know, people do have to comply. So we'll see what happens there. I am confident that Identity Europa did nothing wrong and has nothing to hide. And as a result, I am confident Identity Europa will be able to get off. Now, AIM isn't named in the lawsuit, of course, but it could go poorly for AIM if Identity Europa is granted a big judgment. They would certainly try to make the case that this is the same organization, even though it isn't. But that would just lead to further headaches. So we want Identity Europa to get out. As the only member of Identity Europa at this point, I want Identity Europa to be out of this lawsuit. But I digress. So beyond that, what else? There are a few more things. So we can talk for a little bit about today's Twitter shenanigans. If you've been follow me on Twitter, and if you've been paying attention, you've seen me going toe-to-toe with a certain Yoram. Let me get the pronunciation here. Hazanoy. Yoram Hazanoy. A name as American as apple pie. One of our honored dual citizens who is enriching our political system with his ethnic nepotism. So this guy wrote a book called The Virtue of Nationalism. And in it, he, I believe, cites the Old Testament and you know, maybe other Jewish texts in defense of nationalism. And I was told how great this book is. Oh, this is such a great defense of nationalism. Well, you know, you dig a little deeper, and the nationalism that he supports for his people isn't the same as ours. And in fact, he views the concept of a white man as being an illegitimate, maybe a social construct, right? That's what he was talking about. So it's kind of civic nationalism for thee and ethno-nationalism for me. And we are all familiar with this double standard The reason, obviously, is because someone who is highly ethnocentric and thinking in terms of their group interest is going to say, okay, well, we want to have our little ethnostate. But in America, you know, obviously making America Jewish ethnostate is just totally out of the question. So, you know, does he want there to be people who are trying to preserve America as a largely European American country? No, he wants it to be fairly open. Now, he does, you know, he considers the American nation to be defined by these amorphous values. He's very critical of liberalism, but at the end of the day, he still promotes the proposition nation. So it's very silly. The reason I got into it with him, and I kept my cool. It's, you know, these are calculated tweets. This isn't me just sitting there fuming, putting these out. Definitely no tweeting while angry, no sending messages on the internet while angry. That is a valuable life skill. But what's going on there is he is part of the Edmund Burke Foundation, which amusingly the president thereof is a fellow, I think, David Brog. David, let me look that up. That's right here. So many of these people to keep track of. David Brog, that's right. President of the Edmund Burke Foundation. He formerly was the executive director of Christians United for Israel. Well, David Brog is not a Christian, but given his ethnic background, I think we all can assume where he stands on Israel. And so that just kind of tells you and apparently it's the largest pro-Israel organization in the country, right? It's basically a bunch of evangelicals with having their strings pulled by their charlatan leaders and, you know, ethnic advocates of the Jewish race. So, that's the guy who's the president of the Edmund Burke Foundation. The Edmund Burke Foundation is throwing its inaugural event, which is titled National Conservatism, right? So that is going to be a conference held at the Ritz-Carlton. I signed up. And I received notice that space was limited, so I might not be able to attend. And then I received an email a week later, so basically last night, saying that, and this was from Yoram himself, which was interesting. He said, after some discussion, we decided that you were not to be accepted. It was fairly cordial, but he said, you know, due to professional affiliations, right? It's all very... very, very civilized rhetoric, right? He called me uncivilized for talking about how I was not allowed entry to his conference. I guess to be civilized is to accept your status as an unperson, right? That's what the good people do, right? They just take it and they say, oh, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have a place in the dialogue. Maybe I shouldn't have the ability to broadcast my views to the public. But that isn't what we're about, is it? Absolutely not, right? We do not accept that we are unpersons. We do not accept the dehumanization of identitarians and sincere nationalists in this country or anywhere else in the West. Absolutely not. And, you know, I've had a few people reach out and say, look, Yoram's, he's moving things in the right direction. He's a good guy. If you are to the right of pretty lame people on the right, but you're acting as a gatekeeper to keep our people from moving to the truth, then that makes you even more insidious of an enemy, right? The people who are not part of our camp, but on the right, whom I can respect, find common ground with, are those who shut the hell up about us. Those who do not run their mouths about issues that they know nothing about. Or, you know, one example would be this Ashley St. Clair. Right, another member of the tribe who is, I think she's some kind of brand ambassador for TPUSA. Well, turns out people found out last night that, you know, she's 20 now. So 5 years ago when she was 15, she used to run a Twitter account called Sex Laptop, where she would post, I guess, naked pictures of herself. She was 15 years old. That's like, isn't that child porn? Isn't that illegal? Fortunately, none of that stuff has surfaced and people have encouraged others to not post it if it comes up, because yes, that would be very illegal. But I mean, you can find evidence of this girl just saying some of the most obscene sexual things you can imagine. The point the point there is she, you know, I'm somewhat willing to overlook stuff like that, I guess. I'm very calculated when it comes to attacking others on the right. There's a tendency because there are people who are some degree of sympathetic, and those are the people we don't want to, you know, to piss off necessarily. But in her case, she tweeted out in response to a Ashton Witty tweet showing the picture between, that was one of those, oh, this is what this school in England looked like 50 years ago. This is what it looks like now. And obviously it's showing the Great Replacement. It's showing that the historical population of whatever Western nation it was is being replaced with people from all over the world who have no connection to that country other than that, you know, in the past, their ancestors were colonized by it. And they, so she responded to this Ashton Witty tweet, which was a good tweet. Ashton Witty's like totally nuts, but she's tweeting about the Great Replacement. Sure, that's a tweet I can get behind. But you know, Ashley St. Clair quote tweeted and said, "I feel like this is kind of low key racist. Why would this matter?" Right, which is just the most brain dead, caved in head take that you can imagine. First of all, you're using the left's buzzwords, thinking that that's against others on the right. That's your first failure. Your second failure is to account for the fact that racial demographics are, you know, demographic change in this country, anywhere in the West, has the potential, not only has the potential, it is, as we speak, altering our political institutions, right? So even if you are just this, you know, principled conservative, TPUSA, love low taxes, Reaganomics, not a fan of those libs, but they should stop calling me racist. Like, even if that is your Weltanschauung, right? You should still be concerned about demographic change because the people that are coming in are not going to vote for those policies, right? This stuff was basic back in 2015 when people first discovered these views. This is like, I thought that everyone kind of got that, right? And a lot of people in TPUSA do, right? A lot of people in TPUSA have worse optics than us. So that's kind of saying something. We shouldn't be too harsh on the organization overall, but when its leaders err, we should call them out. And in fact, one good example of the reason why we do this is that when Charlie Kirk was basically called out in a very cordial and polite way by one of our members in Louisiana, we had the leader of a TPUSA chapter, the president of his, it was one of his university's chapter, reach out to us and say, he was just like, man, that was awesome. Like, I love it. Like, he was like, you know, I like TPUSA, I like Charlie, but he's a little neocon sometimes. We're like, yeah, we don't hate Charlie. It's nothing personal. So that's how you succeed with when you interact with these people. You want to take their following, right? We don't, you know, and sure, if Charlie Kirk wants to, you know, join the club, he's more than welcome to as well. But we know that he's financially incentivized to not do that. But the point there is that there are, we do need to be thinking about how we relate not only to the left, and I think we kind of understand the terms of that relationship, but to the right and even the somewhat mildly dissident right. Because there is a difference between the TPUSA stuff and say National Review, right? The Never Trumper stuff and the first stuff. But when it comes to Yoram Hazel, right? Again, he defines the nation in terms of tradition, customs, right? So purely civic and in some degree, perhaps religious terms as well. But the thing that he does is he's very slimy. He's very disingenuous. Not only is he refusing to engage with the actual points that I'm making, and we understand why that is. That is because he is not operating the same way we are. When we go out, we are trying to tell the truth. We are trying to get to the truth because we have the benefit of having the truth on our side. At least on a lot of basic stuff. Obviously, once you get to a certain point where facts and values, diverge. Because it's totally possible that it's totally possible to accept, for example, racial differences in intelligence without accepting, you know, the need to have a majority white country. It's possible. Yeah, it's maybe not because you could technically say, well, we want non-white people with high IQ. That's the Charles Murray IQ nationalism. Tons of problems with that. But wrapping up on Yoram, so they banned me from the conference, and we've been going back and forth on Twitter. He refuses to address any of my views. He has grossly mischaracterized me, and people you know, with our positions, identitarians, all at the same time accusing me of defamation, right? It's crime. I'm not going to use the quote, but you know what I'm getting at there. So we typical tricks, typical tactics from people who are of the disingenuous variety. And I mean, I'll say this right now. I have no issue with Israel being a Jewish state. I think there should be a place in the world where Jewish people can feel at home. But we cannot avoid the fact that the right in this country exists to serve Jewish people. It exists to serve Jewish nationalists. More than the left, way more than the left. There are many Jews on the left, sure. And you have the centrist Democrats that obviously have a sense of ethnic interest and so forth. But guys, if you go to CPAC, it's insane. It really is. Like, you are just aware of the fact that, like, this is not for us. It's for them. That is for them. These institutions are for them. When you talk about Conservatism, Inc., it's basically Zionism. It's basically Zionism. There are obviously other factors that come into play. You have the interests of big, you know, billionaires, corporations, stuff like that. But, I mean, we're never going to have serious change in this country until sincere America First types are in office. They don't have to necessarily be white, sure. But at the same time, it's you know, we can't avoid it. We can't avoid it. Now, there are ways to tastefully deal with this, right? Talking about, you know, the protocols of the elders of Zion or something is clearly not the way to go. but it's just so transparent. You know, people that work as gatekeepers, people that want to have a sense of identity for them. And I mean, that was the thing too, is he really believes that white people should just have American as their identity. Well, I mean, he's an American citizen. So is, you know, I don't know, Elliot Abrams, right? So they get the identity that we have, but they get a special one on top of that too, right? We only get the civic identity. They get the sense that the one that matters, which is the ethno-religious or racial identity, right? And anyone, all of these people on Twitter who are arguing that, it's, you know, Israel's not like you're saying, it's not, you know, ethnic race. That's nonsense, right? Obviously, part of an ethnos entails customs, tradition, sure, all of the practices, the culture. It's basically where the civic stuff comes in. But the law of return, which states that Jews from all around the world can go and live, be immigrants to Israel and eventually become citizens. Is that because Jews from all around the world, are they making sure that these Jews are, no, it's based in ethnicity, right? It is based in ethnicity. And you see how, you know, Israel treats like the Ethiopian Jews. They're like, I don't say it, but it's kind of like, you guys aren't us. And they're not. So that concludes everything on the Yoram Hazanoy front. And I will take a few minutes to explain the strategy there, and then we can go to questions. So I had someone on Twitter say, you know, we shouldn't be impotently demanding debates. Like, we're not skeptics, right? This is cringe or something of that sort. And what I responded to him, I sent him a message because he seemed to be interested in what was going on and a little confused. So I sent him a message. Look, people who have like fairly big brands, right? If we can call them out and get them to retweet our stuff, which I got Yoram to do, and get in his replies, we're occupying space. We're occupying minds. We're forcing all of those people who follow Yoram Hazanoy, who are ardent believers in nationalism, regardless of what definition that might be, guess what? They're thinking about us. We're in their heads. That's good. That's where we want to stay. And if he were to debate me, I would easily, even though this guy has read maybe now more than I will ever read in my life, he's an extremely educated person, we would absolutely point out the absurdities of all of this. And the reason why is I don't need to, like, you know, break out some musty tome. I'm not trying to take an intellectual standpoint here, but the point is that our positions, like, we're rooted in the truth and our truths are controversial. So people who build their positions on the suppression of controversial truths, the last thing they want to do is be told that, you know, the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. The last thing they want to do is to engage in a debate with someone who's just going to say, you know, point out the game, right? I would point out the game. And he knows that, and he doesn't want to do that. So that is a big strength we have going for us. A lot of these people, and this doesn't just apply to Jewish ethnic advocates, it applies to most people on the fake right. They're aware of the fact that their positions are not really rooted in the truth, that they're rooted in falsity. And, you know, maybe some of them don't want to debate because it's seen as not good for their brand, whatever. I sort of sympathize with that. But never forget that we're right. We are absolutely right. And intelligent people, inquisitive people, people with a shred of integrity who aren't just trying to get a job in Conservatism, Inc. to make a little money, maybe a lot of money, I don't know. We have to make sure that they continue to come to us. Now, there's a lot of discussion about optics and messaging. Yeah, maybe we could just avoid talking about Jews, right? We could avoid the anti-Semitism accusation. Well, we just have to make it clear that we're not against Jewish people on the grounds that they're Jewish, that we're not against Jewish people as a group, and point out there is a lot of different, there's a lot of argument within the Jewish community, right? You have the liberal George Soros types, and you have the right-wing Zionist types. But at the end of the day, they agree on a lot of stuff that's bad for us. And, you know, there is no group on the planet that should be exempt from civil critique, right? Polite disagreement. There's no group that should not be allowed to be criticized. And I think those are all very reasonable positions for us to take. So that concludes everything I had for you tonight. Last thing that I forgot. So I want to talk very briefly about the actions that we have coming up. I want to do a little shilling, right? The weekend of 4th of July, we're going to have people coming out to the HQ. Check the announcement where I outlined all of this. I'm not going to go into further detail here just to save time. You can register via one of the payment methods in resources. I would recommend the electronic one we have on file. And we also have the action taking place in Texas later. We're going to be making an announcement for that soon. That's towards the end of the month. We will be announcing, there will be, you know, the ability to purchase tickets and so forth then as well. So now that concludes everything that I had to say. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask them to me on Discord. Fuentes made a good point on stream earlier talking about how the one advantage the alt-right had was that there was a network of organizations. Are there plans for AIM to work with any organizations besides AMREN? I'm open to suggestions. Behind the scenes, there's a lot of collaboration and coordination. It really all depends on the organization. I mean, we're cool with VDare. We're cool with most people behind the scenes. It just depends on like the terms of the... there were just more people active during the alt-right. A lot of people got spooked after Charlottesville, or it stopped being trendy to be politically active. So, but the networks do exist behind the scenes. I can say that much. All right, guys, anything else? Any other questions? Question, would it be wise to point out the puritanical element in Conservatism, Inc., particularly with charismatic Christian movement? There have been a move that has been growing out of Christianity in the USA to move towards a more cheerleading squad for Israel, when this does not, in fact, show historical Christianity. You know, there's a time and place for that, pointing out the, the issues with some of the, it's not all evangelicals, obviously, but, you know, the issues with, I don't know if it's puritanical. Perhaps you could make that claim, but the Puritans obviously did die out a while ago. I think the main issue is evangelical Christianity, though not all. I know evangelicals who are totally cool. You know, they have most religious institutions have their issues these days. It's worth pointing out, yeah, why Christians support Israel so blindly and why that's an issue. I agree. Thoughts on recent YouTube crackdowns. Could this be the end of right-wing YouTube? It's definitely another dent. I think most of us are still going to be on there. They definitely work incrementally to minimize the amount of outrage. But we'll see. I think social media websites platforms definitely want to crack down before, before the election. I think that's a big part of this. So we'll see. All right, I'm seeing some typing here. We'll give it a few minutes. Should we learn to code? Yeah, I would actually recommend that. That's a very valuable skill to have. And if you're kind of at a point in your life where you're a little younger, you know, high IQ, looking for something, I mean, it's going to be... it depends on what you go into, but I can tell you that definitely the movement has need of that stuff. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of money doing it in the movement, but that seems like a pretty good career to have, to work freelance and make good money. So I would advocate that. Yes. When can we start an AIM book club? Well, we can do that tonight. I can create an AIM book server. I think you are the guy. I think we talked about this. You'd be the guy for that. I'm actually going to do that right now, just so I don't forget, but I did write it down. All right, well, I'm not seeing any questions, guys. Thank you for joining me tonight for this weekly address. I hope you enjoyed it. Read the handbook, pay your dues, go to meetups. Come to the July 4th of July action, come to the Texas action when it's announced, and keep up the good work. Thank you. Good night.